testing how long, how many nights and weekends you can work and still be fresh enough to do a podcast.
Well, how many, what's the answer? How many did you
The do? Answer is three, currently, 3 weeks in a row.
How much, how many days can you have your stocks go down and you're about to be bankrupt and still do a podcast?
That's probably about a couple of days.
Oh, okay.
Maybe a week. maybe all it takes is the attitude of, oh, it'll go back up.
Exactly. Yeah, no. I know, eventually. You know.
That's all it takes. No, I lost a lot. I've lost a lot of savings, and I've been fairly well diversified. I've got gold and
your gold should be up.
And water, and
gold should be up anyway.
No, not really.
No, maybe not lately. But how long ago did you buy the gold? That should have been
over
about
a year ago.
I don't know what it was a year ago, but as of several years ago, gold's gone up about 4 or 5 times. Like several years ago. Not that I bought any because I didn't, but I mean I just know that it's good.
So, no, it's been a while since it's been over a year since I started getting into it, but it was around the time when we were still just recovering from the crash,
I don't know the history month by month.
No, I don't either.
It has gone up a lot,
but I just know I was really depressed and everybody was really depressed, and I was just starting to consult, so I went to this advisor who then said, oh, well, we'll put you in water and some biomedical and some gold.
The water and biomedical, I have no idea how those are going. Biomedical, I think, went way, way, way too high at one point. People had way too much expectations of that stuff. Anyway.
So, greetings, everybody. This is the world-famous
Mark Bernay.
And I'm just Wes.
Okay.
And you're listening to the WNO Show, a show where we come together and slurp.
And slurp our food.
We slurp our food. We talk about technology and its foundations
technology,
in the past.
Technology. Technology. Technology.
So you can be Ken and I'll be, be
I
Andy.
I know. So what are you in Korea this week, Andy?
Yeah. What's going on? He's like one day he's in Korea, the next day he's in LA, the next day. Well, anyway, Ken Radio is amazing in terms of the amount of work he puts into this and just every day he does a show every day, and it's actually fairly consistently good. And he does not edit a whole lot. I know that for a fact. He kind of just works through his show, puts the different audio files in that he has to for the music, and then just posts it up, and that's pretty much it. And in some cases, there are errors in the files. He works so fast that he sometimes screws it up and doesn't recognize it.
He doesn't go back and correct them?
No. Yeah. Sometimes.
Okay.
Or like he'll have he'll forget to unmute a track.
I've heard that happen.
But anyway, enough about the negative side of Ken Radio.
Right. Besides, he's a competitor anyway.
Right, and we're just so awesome and so great and so much better than he is.
He does, of course. We're slurping. He doesn't slurp. But anyway.
So how would you like to start the show off?
I have items.
I do too. I actually have items.
Okay. Yeah. One of those is just kind of a silly idea, but it actually makes a lot of sense. A couple of bloggers are talking about how if you have a phone that has a pretty decent screen, it doesn't have to be an iPhone, but just anything that has a modern high-resolution screen that can display pictures.
Okay.
What you do is scan in.
Oh, thank you.
Can I finish with this?
If you have a modern phone that can display pictures on the screen, scan in all the cards you would normally have in your wallet.
Awesome.
You know, scan in like your membership cards for Costco or just different things like that.
Yeah.
And Blockbuster and stuff.
I want that plate. I have no plate.
Yeah.
How do I have no plate?
And your point is? I don't know.
Okay. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. So you scan in all your membership cards and store them on your phone. And these people claim that if you go to a store, as long as your cards are good enough quality that the barcode reader of the store can read them.
Right.
Or maybe not even that. Maybe the store personnel would be willing to type them in or something, the numbers in. That they've never been turned down yet for not having the physical card. That the store personnel are willing to scan in the barcode on the virtual card on their screen.
That's interesting.
So,
I suspect there are places who would have a problem with that. Like 24-Hour Fitness, they want your card. And what they'll do is if you want a towel, they hold it, you take the towel, yeah. And then in order to get the card back, you have to bring the towel.
No, let them hold the phone. That would be even better.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Are you kidding? My G1? There's no way.
Yeah. And also not for a... not for a driver's license or government stuff. I doubt that would work. It's just for stores and things. So.
Right. Lots of garlic.
Anyway, that's an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, go ahead with your item.
Okay. I've always had an interest in what kind of tools were available for people early on in the beginning stages of developing video games. Like sort of, you know, we have, what's the name of the Code Warrior? You know, you have like Code Warrior for the Mac and for the PC, and you can use that to develop stuff for like Symbian and different cell phones. It's kind of a development environment. What tools were available for somebody who was developing for, let's say, the Atari 2600?
There was a BASIC.
Was there a BASIC? Well, there was a cartridge BASIC, yeah, that you could use. But I'm talking, like, what did it look like if you wanted to develop? Did you have to write everything in assembler? Or?
I know how to, I did it a little bit for the Commodore 64, and I probably used BASIC, but I did know the assembler language, because I did assembler language programming for the KIM-1.
Okay.
And the Commodore line was all the same chip.
Huh. The PET?
Yeah, the PET and all those were the same chip, the 6502.
The VIC-20?
Yeah, they were all the 6502.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Apple II was also. Apple II was 6502.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
So.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, the reason the Apple II was, because what used to talk about this, I'm sure I can find a link about it. By the way, anytime we give out any links in here, go to slurpcast.com. If you don't catch the link, or sometimes it's too long, or sometimes you don't know the link off the top of our head,
right?
So we search and find one. But on slurpcast.com, you'll find the background info for each show with all the links that we talk about, mention and stuff. Anyway, the Watt says that the reason the Apple used 6502, which were several choices at that time.
Uh-huh.
Well, first of all, he never expected to make a commercial project. He just made this thing for himself just to play around with.
Okay.
And
is that mine? It's my water, right?
Yes. Have I been drinking it? I don't know if I've been drinking it or not.
Somebody filled yours up.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he was just at some convention or something where Commodore people were handing out the 6502 chips for free,
along with documentation. They were handing it out?
Just handing out free 6502 chips along with documentation, just trying to get developers interested in that platform.
Okay.
And it worked because...
Yeah, it certainly did. Yeah.
Because, you know, the early day machines were based on that. But that's the Atari was not, though. The Atari used... What was the other one? There was another popular one, 6800 maybe or something. I forgot what it was, but the Atari machines, I don't think, were 6502.
Okay. No, that was before, right? Before Woz and Steve.
Right.
And in fact, Steve worked for Atari and created Breakout.
Did he?
Yeah. With Woz. Steve Wozniak.
Okay.
And Steve Jobs.
Yeah, okay. So they worked at Hewlett Packard also.
Did they?
At some point, yeah. Yeah, they first met at Hewlett Packard. Is the...
No.
Yeah,
we don't need the sugar, do you?
No.
Thank you. Cool.
Anyway, so I can tell you the development things on the 6502, because I did some stuff on the KIM-1 and some stuff on the...
What about Drum? You were talking about like how people used to code.
That's earlier. Okay. That was really before my time. But my father actually worked on really early day punch board programming. Mm-hmm. You know, the really early day IBM... The IBM accounting machines and stuff had these boards where you'd put little jumpers. They just had a million holes in them with little legends on them showing what the different holes did.
Okay.
And you'd write a program just by putting little jumper wires from one hole to another, from one hole to another. You might have 100 little jumper wires.
Nice. Wow.
On this board. And then the boards would plug into the machine, so you could do some...
Yes.
So you can have different boards programmed for different reasons and just move a big lever and the board could be removed and then you plug a different board with a different set of wires into the machine.
Very cool.
To program the machine to do something else.
Okay.
So it's mainly just for counting machines or... actually at that level, I was thinking key punch machines, but no, that's not true. Key punch machines, we program whatever slight bit that they could. Yeah. Whatever slight bit that they could by a card. Okay. We both have items about key punch things that were just on the web this week, actually. So
yeah.
We'll post some links about the history of key punches and stuff. But anyway, key punches could be programmed by punching a bunch of holes in a card, and you put that one card in around a drum and stick it in the machine.
Mm-hmm.
And the machine, it's sat there in the window, so you could always watch that. The drum turning around and watch that programming card, and it could do things like automatically duplicate a field from the previous card, or automatically skip a few columns or something. I forget.
Okay.
So
they were in demand.
Yes, but anyways, that was at one point. Then the fancier machines, like these tabulating machines, could do reports where you give them a bunch of cards. Each card represented one item of data. And you could program the tabulating machine to add up all those cards and summarize them and print reports in various ways,
mm-hmm.
all by plugging these boards with a million wires all over the board.
Huh.
Okay. And I have a sample theater organs, pipe organs,
mm-hmm.
the Wurlitzer pipe organs and maybe other brands could do the same thing. They had these plug-in boards that were very similar, and I grabbed a piece that they were going to throw away.
Wow.
So I have a small piece of this,
mm-hmm.
but it was very similar kind of plug boards, except on the Wurlitzers, I don't think you could replace boards. I don't think they had the idea of the whole board going into a socket.
Okay.
You would just program things about the organ by making a bunch of jumper wires on a board like that.
Hmm. So what 10-year span of time in the history was the... What 10-year time span in history had key punch job positions that were the highest in demand?
60s, I would think.
Let's see if you're right.
That's when I was familiar with them and stuff.
So what 10-year, like between
60 and 70, I guess. I don't know.
Let's see. The historic peak was during the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, okay.
That's when they were in the highest.
I'm just going to say this from my own personal experience when I was a kid and
mm-hmm.
watching what my father did and going into work and in his office and watching what's going on there. So
that's awesome.
Which one is which? I have no idea which dish is which.
Is that the vindaloo?
Maybe. Does it have potato in it?
I don't know. Yeah, vindaloo has potato.
Yeah.
What is that? I like the darker potato one. I'm gravitating towards the darker one because it means more spices.
But you won't jailbreak your iPhone, which would people who go on the dark side would be doing that.
Oh, this is the vindaloo that has potato.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
So anyway, but back to... Oh, that's right. You asked me about something I had mentioned to you before,
mm-hmm.
that I heard from people who did early day corporate programs on programming on... million-dollar computers that the average person could never possibly have at home.
Okay.
That they had a model of something, I have no idea what it was, maybe I could find it, that had a drum memory only, electronic memory at all,
mm-hmm.
or just maybe just several, right? Would have to have enough memory to do one calculation in.
So does that mean they were official drum programmers?
Yes.
Okay, never mind.
I know.
All right.
And it was a machine, so it's kind of like drum machine programming.
Hmm. Okay.
A drum at the time was really a drum. Later on, they called a drum, a series of discs could be called a drum. Basically, a drum is something like a hard drive.
Yeah.
Except where you have a separate head for every track. So one revolution of the drum is enough to read everything.
Okay.
Within one revolution, you don't have heads that have to move. There's one head basically for every possible track.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, within one revolution of the drum, you could pick up any data on it. Okay. I mean, one at a time. You have to spin it multiple times.
Okay.
I mean, not the, depending on the electronics available and stuff like that, you might not be able to.
Sort of one head that could move back and forth between the tracks.
Yes, because that would take a lot of time to move. And a drum would have enough heads to cover every track all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So the original drums were truly a drum shape. Actually, we've never seen one. It's not like a music drum at all, because the drums would be cylindrical, but a long cylinder, you know, much, whereas a drum in music would be a very short cylinder, kind of.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, so a drum would be a fairly long cylinder with a whole bunch of heads along it and a motor to spin it around, and the heads could read or write data on that one track.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, I saw things called drums. Now, really more a typical hard drive with a bunch of disc platters, but they had a whole bunch of heads, so that there would be a head for every track, even though it was a disc format.
Okay. Okay.
So logically, it was still like a drum, you know.
Hmm.
But anyway, so people told me about this early day machine that I used to program for. It had a drum only, and no one had bothered to develop an assembler for it. So they were prepared to program it in raw machine language. And then, if they just did your normal programming, the problem is that you had to wait for the drum to come around. You know, if you just had a bunch of instructions all in a row in the memory, like you would in any other computer, the problem is, in order to go from one instruction to the next, you'd have to wait for the drum to spin around, probably. Because at the time you handled the one instruction to the calculations, the drum would have gone beyond the next instruction, and you have to so it would slow it down a lot.
Okay.
So they not only had to, by hand, write all the machine language program, but they also had to decide by hand where to place every byte of the program language on the drum.
On the drum?
So that as one statement was finished, the drum would be just about to spin around to where they needed the next statement to be.
Jeez.
And they say with no assembler or no real aids to help them do that.
Okay.
So I never worked on anything that primitive.
Okay.
But
that sounds really crazy. I think you did. Yeah, you did mention that before. But
right. Okay.
Awesome.
But for the 6502, there was people either writing machine language or writing BASIC if a BASIC interpreter existed for the particular machine.
Okay.
Maybe later on there were assemblers. But I started out with the KIM-1. Which did not come with any assembler. So you were supposed to just do raw machine language, is how you're supposed to program it.
Okay.
And I...
You wrote your own OS.
Yeah, I wrote my own very primitive OS, but yes, I did.
Yeah.
And I got an assembler because I found out at the Homebrew Computer Club, someone handed out a punch paper tape for a cross-assembler for the 6502 that would run on some other machine. It was written in Fortran. It was meant to run on some DEC mini computer or something. I don't remember. But they passed out the Fortran source code of this cross interpreter, cross assembler.
Okay.
And a cross assembler, as opposed to a regular assembler, it just means that it doesn't run on the actual machine. It runs on a different type of machine.
Okay.
But develops code for this one.
Hmm.
Okay. So I took that Fortran source code and modified it enough to get it working on IBM mainframes, which is what I had access to. And then so I started writing my KIM-1 programs in that, in real assembler.
Okay.
But no macros. It was just a very simple assembler with no macros. So it was still kind of tedious, but at least an assembler helped.
Wow.
And then later on, I did a little bit of programming for the VIC-20 and the Commodore 64.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there was a BASIC for those.
Yeah.
And probably assemblers, I just forget.
It was like chip BASIC or something. It was built into the machines, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because if you like did the equivalent of a Control-Alt-Delete at boot up, it would end up
in BASIC.
In the BASIC.
Yeah, okay. I don't remember. But people could write in machine language because you could have your BASIC program poke in a machine language program in the memory.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you do that. If BASIC wasn't fast enough for some particular function, you'd write that function in raw machine language and take all the hex bytes and just have your BASIC program poke byte by byte into a section of memory and then branch to it or something.
Nice.
But I think there was an assembler cartridge later, or assembler debugger cartridge or something. I probably have it. I may well still have such a thing.
There was something for the Sinclair, which is the machine that I started programming on, which you could do assembler in the Sinclair, but as you did, you know, poking and peeking and doing various different things, it would actually be manipulating the data within the chip itself, within the chipset. Okay. So you'd get like funky characters on the screen just by doing a certain poke somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
I wrote my first digital sampling program.
Well, those early machines tended to be have memory mapped screens, so the the hardware that drove the screen would just correspond to certain bytes in memory.
Mm-hmm.
So you would just use any program to say what you want to get certain bytes of certain memory locations, and that would automatically show up as something visible on the screen.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's probably what that's about.
But I want to know about the foundations.
Right.
I'm curious about the foundations of video game programming.
Yeah, beyond just little things in BASIC and sprites and stuff like that. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that much more about it.
Or those Star Raiders or whatever that game was called that Nolan Bushnell and his cronies at some school.
It might have been in Fortran. It was probably in Fortran or machine language or something.
Mm-hmm.
Fortran was quite popular at all those schools and stuff. So.
Awesome. I like yours better than mine.
Yeah.
What is this that you got?
Chicken korma.
Okay, chicken korma. So, by the way, we're eating at... Where are we eating at, Mark?
Swad.
Swad. What does that mean?
In Lafayette, California. Just a name.
What's that?
The proper name.
It's Swad?
S-W-A-D, Indian restaurant.
Yeah. We don't know what it means, though.
It's probably a joke on the stupid American. It probably means fuck your mother. It's just a joke on the stupid American. That's all we know. But, you know.
No, it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do you have anything, or should I go?
No, go ahead and do something. I've got more. Yeah.
So just to speak a little bit about this, Mark, the economy is kind of messy right now, and this one article that I grabbed says that some state unemployment funds are drying up. Demand for unemployment benefits across the country has put a strain on the state employment funds, and they're saying basically... Like, we're going to hit insolvency in 2009.
Why don't you just tell people to get a job?
Because there are none.
I mean, everybody I know has ever been on unemployment.
Yeah.
Didn't really need it. Maybe they needed it for a week or two.
I did.
Did you really need it? Did you actually continue to look? The people I know just live off of it and don't bother to look for a job until it runs out. Then they quickly get a job at the end.
I couldn't live off of that. It's not enough. It wasn't enough to keep my head above water.
Right.
I mean, in some states, you can live off of unemployment just fine, like Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't able to live off that at all. And it was nice to have as a cushion, but I couldn't find a job. And I'm, you know, I have skills. Yeah. I still couldn't find a job, so.
Okay, I'm sure it's true sometimes, but I know other people, though, who obviously could have found a job. Because the day before the unemployment ran out, they would go find one easily enough. So,
well, if it's a menial type thing, like you know, working for Jack in the Box or Starbucks, then yeah. But if you're in a specialized position, you've got unique skills or something.
Right. Yeah, so I doubt it's going to come to that. Somehow.
No. Things are a little scary. I suspect that we're going to see the market get better the closer we get to, you know, finding a new president.
Yeah, that's my theory.
Yeah.
That the current government will want to look good so that McCain will get reelected, and they'll pull every trick in the financial trick in the book to make the economy look good on election day. So I'm thinking in terms of selling all my stuff then.
I know, that's kind of what I was doing.
Yeah.
Like, I saw how much I had lost, and I was freaking out.
Yeah.
So anyway. Yeah, mine's kind of spicy. The Vindaloo.
Yeah, Vindaloo is supposed to be.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. I found a shareware thing. I've been looking for something like it for years.
Uh-huh.
For Windows XP, this is strictly for Windows. I don't know if there's anything like it for Mac. For Windows XP and below, there was a shareware I've been using for many years called File Tracer, FileTracer.
Okay.
It's filetracer.com. I think the author has abandoned it, so you can still download a free demo version. But I have a feeling he abandoned the website, so if you try to pay for a serial number to use it more than the demo period, I think you won't be able to, but I forget why I think that, but I think I know people will try that. But the real problem is he never updated it for Vista.
Oh.
He barely even updated it for XP.
Okay.
And the website still talks about, now it works with XP! !!
Okay.
So I really missed that program. on Vista, and I finally found a replacement for it. What these things do, it's a file search engine that does not search within files whatsoever.
Okay.
It strictly searches by file name. They make an index of all the files on your hard drive, mm-hmm. and multiple hard drives, and they keep the index up to date by hooking into the operating system. So every time a file is created or deleted or renamed, they know about it immediately and update their database. So you very rarely have to rebuild the index from scratch.
Okay.
And because they have this complete index at all times, searches are instant. Like it can search, type in some portion of a file name, it'll give you results in maybe 1 second or half a second for all those things.
Mm-hmm.
So I use that kind of stuff constantly, but then I was missing it on Vista because the Microsoft search that works on Vista is for some reason just horribly slow. Microsoft Search will search within the files as well.
And by the way, it has processes that sit in the background and take up all kinds of CPU time.
I know.
Yeah.
But the Microsoft ones will search within the file.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't care about that, because I rarely do,
mm-hmm.
you just want to search by file name, even though the index is built, it still takes a long time to actually search for a file. Maybe you'd give a search and a couple of file names will show up, and then a couple more, and a couple more, and 5 minutes later, maybe it'll stabilize and stop finding any more, but you can't quite tell when it's really done and stuff. It's just horrible. Whereas File Tracer would say, we just come back instantaneously. So, anyway, I found this one called Everything that apparently has been out for a long time. I just never heard of it until recently. But Everything does basically the same thing the File Tracer did.
Hmm.
It builds an index automatically, and it keeps the index up to date and stuff.
Okay.
Everything only works on NTFS drives, whereas File Tracer would work on anything because we're hooked in the operating system. But otherwise, say Everything is very good. We'll put a link to it on Slurpcast.
Okay.
Oh, the other thing File Tracer does that I use sometimes because I never think to find a replacement. I know there are other things that could do the same thing. File Tracer, one of the reasons it's called that is you can turn on a trace of all changes to files and just watch it flow by.
Okay.
So if you're trying to debug a program or you're trying to do something and you're not quite sure what files a program uses, you can watch start a File Tracer trace, then run your function in the program and watch all the file names flow by, and then you can scroll back later and look at them and stuff. So Everything, the Everything program doesn't do that, but there are other ones that will do that function as well.
Huh.
So.
That's cool. It's very cool. Yeah.
And they're both, and Everything is free.
Free!
But File Tracer does charge, you can, or maybe you can't get a serial number.
So, T-Mobile's reporting a very, very huge amount of pre-sale orders for the G1 Android phone.
It's probably a little bit early. I bet it'll be real buggy and stuff. But.
Yeah. Although, who's the guy who does the two guys who do the reviews, podcast? And they're, I forget their name. This is really bad. I'll put a link in the show notes to these two guys, to their show, their podcast. They review technology. They review hard drives, hard devices, and Apple products and things like that. This guy got a hold of it. Was one of the first ones to get a hold of it and actually likes it a lot. Says that it's very fast, it's very quick. There's a couple of annoyances with the browser. What he was saying is basically when you're in a bad cell area and you're trying to browse the web, sometimes a lot of cell phones will continuously search for data nonstop. And you have to hit stop in some cases when you know you're just not going to get out of that dead zone.
Oh, okay.
Well, he was saying the stop button is buried, so it's very hard to get to. So if you get into that situation, you have to click twice to actually stop it from loading a page.
Oh, but that's, that's very early beta test right now. So.
But otherwise, there was...
And it's open source, so all they have to do is go into the source code and fix it themselves. What's their problem?
So anyway, so it looks like that's going to be a pretty interesting device. I'm kind of excited that it's going to be T-Mobile, AT&T.
No, but it'll be both. Because the whole point of Android is that it's totally open source, totally open hardware, will work on multiple hardware.
Yeah, but I suspect
it's not going to stick with T-Mobile only.
No, I know, but I suspect a lot of providers are sitting around waiting to see what happens with the T-Mobile release.
Right.
I think we're good. Yeah.
No, but T-Mobile's network is worse than AT&T's or the same. Certainly not better. I mean, maybe they share towers.
Well, it's not so much their signal strength or anything like that. It's more like their customer service and their and how much they charge.
Right.
I mean, they're not out to butt rape you as much as AT&T is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So. Right. So anyway, so that's my interesting update on Android.
But AT&T's data plans, it's like $30 data plan for the iPhone, $20 for other devices. AT&T's not really that bad. And AT&T website.
AT&T will gaffle your money if you're not careful.
They'd right, but we'll still Sprint and stuff.
Okay.
I probably told the story here before, the Sprint with the Pocket PC device. Sprint, I haven't checked lately, but at the time I had my Pocket PC with Sprint, we had like three data plans, $15 a month, $20 a month, $25 a month.
Okay.
And the $15 a month is all a Pocket PC needed or could use.
Okay.
Pocket PC just simply did not have the software to use anything else. So the $15 plan was the only proper one.
Okay.
Not only fine, it was a complete waste of money to get the other one. But the stores would always lie and talk you into getting a $20 or $25 one.
Mm-hmm.
So AT&T does the same thing. AT&T has this $20 a month plan that's perfectly adequate for any internet device, but they try to bug you into getting something more expensive.
Okay.
So I think they're all that way, actually.
Yeah, they're all out to get your money.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Anyway, speaking of that, I've talked before about how to use a GoPhone SIM card.
Right.
To have prepaid unlimited data for $20 a month, no contract, no voice calls being necessary,
uh-huh.
anything like that.
That's right.
They're dropping that. The strong rumors are they're dropping that in the middle of November. But you can buy some months ahead, but I'm only up to three. So I bought 3 months ahead of that, because I do like doing that.
All right.
And then if it really gets turned off, I'll just start using my iPhone for data already, because I know how to do that. I just don't, it's not as convenient.
Okay. So we're almost out of time.
Okay.
We have to move on to the most important part of the show, which is
The iPhone
and iTouch applications.
You start, because I'll have to dig through my applications and find one.
Okay. Because Mark gets applications.
I have too many billions of applications right now.
Okay, let's see.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I have one. I have a good one in mind that I don't think I've ever talked about before.
Okay. So I'll talk briefly about WikiMe. I think you had brought it up at some point.
That's
before.
What I was just going to do.
What?
Go ahead.
Are
go
you
ahead.
Kidding
I'll,
me?
I'll go find somebody
really?
Else. Go ahead.
Okay, so people who are addicted to Wikipedia, like myself, tend to use that as the search engine when it comes to finding out information about a particular topic.
Right.
You know, you want to know the history of a computer company, a computer device, or something like that, you might look on Wikipedia. Wikipedia covers everything. I mean, it's massively huge. It has cities, towns, neighborhoods, and a lot of geographically based things that you might want to be interested in that are nearby.
Right.
Well, somebody cobbled those two ideas together, Wikipedia versus where you are located, and decided that based on the iPhone's GPS and the iTouch's Wi-Fi location finder, that it would be interesting to pull up results that are on Wikipedia that are nearby you at any given time.
Right.
So as a result, the tool that now exists is called WikiMe, and it does really truly work, and it's got enough, at least in the Bay Area, got enough Wikipedia geocoded Wikipedia entries that it will come up with stuff that's located nearby.
Especially where I live in the city.
Yeah.
It comes up like 50 things nearby or something, but yeah.
Well, where I'm located in the East Bay, in Black Hawk, I'm kidding, there's tons of stuff.
Right.
And I'm actually in a fairly hidden away area. You wouldn't really, there's not a lot of things to do.
Yeah. But you have that school. You have that college near you or something.
Yeah, there's always a college.
Right.
But anyway.
So it probably would have an article about
that. Actually, the funny thing is no.
It doesn't?
No, it doesn't.
The and first why haven't results, you started one?
Huh? Because you can't use WikiMe to do that. You can't start
But you just use regular Wikipedia, the right one. It'll, as long as you geocode it, it'll show up on WikiMe.
Yeah. Now, could you use Wikipedia? There's another application, which I won't talk about in detail, called, it's just Wiki, what is it called? Wikipanion?
There's a bunch of them, actually.
Yeah.
There's four or five.
Okay.
Very, very similar.
I like Wikipanion.
Yeah.
But Wikipanion, it doesn't, do any of these things let you create and edit?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
The one I use for just general purpose Wikipedia stuff is what? iWiki. IWIK.
Okay.
But then I downloaded three or four of them. They're all kind of the same, so yeah. I forget why I like
them. They all just format the Wikipedia page to fit the iPhone.
Yeah, which is nice, which, yeah, which I do like.
But,
yeah. And they link to other pages, other Wikipedia pages.
Right.
Some of them have web browsers built in, so you can link to an external list without having to leave the program and stuff.
Right.
The first lady's calling. Oh, my God.
What?
But
I thought that was her home screen.
No. So, anyway.
So there you go. That's my application.
Yeah.
What everybody, go out and check it out.
Because I was going to talk about the same one. So
WikiMe is free, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I like Loopt, L-O-O-P-T,
right,
which is also free.
Okay.
And Loopt used to be just for people you know who have an iPhone. I forget whether it works on any other phones but iPhone. I forget. I think there might be a couple of other models of something that it works with.
Okay.
But Loopt was originally just something for you and your friends, where it, when you start the program, it looks up where you are with anything it can find on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
It just asks the operating system where you are,
okay,
and it gets back, cellular data or cell tower data or Wi-Fi or GPS or whatever. And then if you merely go into the program, then go back out of it, it'll put into its database where you are,
okay,
and your friends on that network can then bring up a map at any time of where you are.
Okay.
Okay. You can also type in comments where when your friends look you up, they'll see what comment you typed in as well as where
cool.
you are.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool.
It can interface nowadays with Facebook and Twitter, and they're planning to do another one or two later.
Okay.
But, if you make an entry in Loopt, it'll automatically, let's say, look up where you are. Then you type in some comment. You can have it automatically make that as your Facebook status,
okay,
including a little map on your Facebook page showing where you are.
Now, like that. Do you have to register with them?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so you got a basic. Now, did you give them your passwords for all your other.
For that one, yes. Although nowadays, actually, when you sign up for those things, it really launches a web page where you sign up.
Okay.
So I don't think they necessarily see your password for the other ones.
Oh, okay.
At least for Facebook, it's done through a Facebook app.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. Like StumbleUpon does the same sort of thing.
Yeah. But so not with GPS.
Right. No, but I mean, like, you know, you go to the actual application that you want to join, or
right,
you want to merge or connect with, and you log in on that account.
And then, so they don't necessarily see your password.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I'm not really sure whether Loopt sees my password or not. I don't care.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not worried about it.
Well, I feel that way about Digsby. I have a Digsby account.
They know everything.
They know everything, so.
Yeah. Yeah, Digsby is a good program.
I love Digsby. Yeah.
It's a multi-purpose instant messenger program for the PC.
They just
and
know
Mac them, too, don't they?
They don't yet have a Mac version because they do advertise that they do, and as soon as you click through,
one
it says
person. Yes, our company is one.
Is it really
one person? That one person answers all email and makes all blog entries.
Okay.
And I've seen comments by people that don't trust it. It's just this one guy doing everything, but he really does do a very good job of tech support and all that.
He makes it seem like there's many, many people working there.
Except it's always him when the answer.
Right.
You know,
right.
Is the thing.
But, well, he has come out with a brand new version that's actually a lot more memory efficient on the PC side.
Right.
It takes up a very small amount of memory, RAM. I don't know the numbers, but it's really, really good. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the other thing the Loopt now has. And there's this thing I used to like on the PC. I used to fool around with it, but there weren't any, hardly anyone else ever used it, where it would figure out where you are based on Wi-Fi or based on your IP address. No, I'm sorry, you would tell it. You would tell it where you are.
Okay.
And it was kind of like its own brand of private instant messenger, but the buddy list would show other members of that network who are near you based on what they typed in where they were.
Okay.
Okay,
right.
So I always thought that was kind of cool, except hardly anyone used it. In all of San Francisco, there'd be five people on, and four of them would work for the company, because the company was in San Francisco or something.
Nice.
You know,
nice.
I mean, I'm exaggerating, but it was kind of like that.
Okay.
Yeah, so I forget the name of that, but they went out of business.
Wait.
Yeah.
I remember that program. They went out of business, really?
Well, they're gone. Yeah.
Mevo or?
Something.
Mevo, wait.
I'll find it. I still have a drive. I still have some software there.
I have it installed on my Mac, yeah.
Yeah, I still have some stuff installed, so
okay.
I can find it.
Weird.
Anyway, So I found something. So Loop now does something like that.
Okay.
Actually, there's another one for the iPhone called Where Is. Yeah, that's what they do. No, Who's Here? No.
Okay, Who's Here?
Who's Here.
All right.
Does the same thing, but Loop has a million times more users on it. But both of those use the GPS or whatever they can get to get your location.
Okay.
And they kind of work like this other thing where they bring you up a buddy list of everyone around you.
Okay.
You know, how here's all the people within 1 mile, within 2 miles, within 3 miles and stuff.
Yeah.
So Who's Here is very rarely used. And again, in all of San Francisco, there might be 10 or 20 people nowadays. Whereas Loop, there'd be hundreds. There's hundreds of Loop users.
Okay.
I checked out here, you know, while you were outside looking up that that guy.
Yeah.
Because Wes had to go outside to find the Wi-Fi signal.
Right. But anyway, yeah, I don't have an iPhone.
Right. I told you to get one. No one listens to me.
I don't want to get locked in AT&T.
Yeah. So
I got my reasons. So anyway, go ahead. So I was out there.
So while I was waiting for you, I went into Loop just to check in for my friends. All one of them who uses Loop.
Uh-huh.
To see where I am. And I checked that social networking part of it. And like nobody was within 10 miles.
Okay.
Whereas in San Francisco, I get maybe 50 or 100 people within 1 mile.
Huh. So, okay.
So.
That's cool.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's kind of a cool application.
Yeah.
You were doing this idea of getting MySpace people.
Yeah.
I tried to get a Loop person. I haven't really tried very hard, but with one guy I looped, his advertising message, you know, when you scroll down the list, then with the little message for each person.
Yeah.
His message was, my roommate bet me $50. I would never meet anyone on here. Want to split it.
Okay.
So I sent him an email. I sent him a message through Loop, telling him to meet us for a podcast, because even though his roommate was probably talking about if you meet someone socially through this, you get $50. I'm sure that's what he's talking about, but the roommate just said if you meet someone, if he showed up in a restaurant and met us and took part in one of the podcasts, we would just interview him or something, he should be able to get the $50 and it would be a fun story. But he never answered. So anyway.
Yeah. You sent me the email for that.
Yeah, but he never answered.
All right, we've got to bring the show to a close, unfortunately.
Okay.
Can
I have this item? Can I have that item?
I've got 14 other. I just try to pick the best ones of the best.
Yep.
Okay, bud. Okay. So again, thank you for listening to the show. Thank you guys for participating in the blog, even though you have not.
Right. Leave comments if you actually listen to this and stuff.
Want to send a shout out to what's his name?
Media Hound.
Media what?
Media Hound.
Something Tristan.
Yep,
Tristan.
Photo Tristan. He doesn't want the two words to be used together, so you have to edit this.
Oh, okay.
He's either Media Hound or he's Photo Tristan.
Alright, Media Hound.
In different places.
Same. Okay. Alright, Media Hound.
Okay.
So anyway.
Or Photo Tristan.
Yeah, thanks for being the only one who's actually been posting and getting mad at us and telling us when we're doing things wrong.
Right.
It's fine.
Right.
We totally appreciate it, and I appreciate the fact that you go to www.slurpcast.com and, and are actually listening to the show enough to catch us when we're wrong.
I know, exactly. Yeah.
So.
Okay.
All right, thank you.